Good afternoon, everybody, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, colleagues, friends. I have done this presentation a few times, representing and trying to make happy three agencies. Now I have to make happy five agencies. Now, to me, having five agencies working on the report is a very welcome news. But I also feel the burden on my shoulders to try to please everybody. First of all, I want to start by congratulating a dedicated team that put this really extremely valuable document together. In my view, one of the most comprehensive, well-done, and well-evidenced assessments that we've had so far. So congratulations, some of them are in this room, some of them are in their agencies, working on other things. I'd like to congratulate them on behalf of all of us. Now, the 2030 Agenda is a transformation vision which calls on all countries and stakeholders to work together to end hunger and all forms of malnutrition, among other things. It has differences, fundamental differences from the MDGs, because it's individual and collective responsibility, and it doesn't only include the low-income countries and the middle-income countries. It includes everybody. So everybody in their own country are supposed to meet the goals, but also as a community, as an international community, try to meet all of them. Even more importantly, for us and for our purpose, the 2030 Agenda brings food security and nutrition under one single goal. Goal number 2, and especially 2.1 and 2.2 targets. Fulfilling the ambitions of the 2030 Agenda will require a more comprehensive understanding of and also actions towards achieving the goals. SOFI 2017, as you heard before from the Director General, marks the beginning of monitoring this transformation agenda when it comes to food security and all forms of malnutrition. So it monitors progress on food security and nutrition and provide analysis of key issues and root causes and also the relationships between some of this food security, nutrition, and other goals. SOFI 2017 aims to promote a more integrated and critical thinking on these important issues. Another important change in SOFI is that the report not only monitors progress, as I said, in low- and middle-income countries, but in all countries, because there are nutritional issues that are very prevalent, as I will show you in a minute, in high-income countries as well. This is exactly in the spirit of the 2030 Agenda I described before. Now, this is in the picture what has already been said. If you look at the yellow or orange line that describes the progress, if you see the monitoring of the number of undernourished people, you will see a welcome decline close to 2005, which flattens out a little bit towards the last few years, and then it increases in the last year from 777 million to 815 million. And, of course, an even more dramatic decline on the percentage, which is the lower line, the blue line, in the prevalence of undernourished until 2015, where we have also a blip from 10.4 to 10.6 to 11%. So 11% of people today are considered undernourished in the world. Now, there is one. The worrying trend in the world hunger is not yet reflected in the figures regarding stunting. You know, stunting is a serious condition and is measured for children ages up to 5 years of age, which are too short for their age. If stunting happens in the first 2 years of a child's life, it can leave long-lasting impediments, physical or mental, as adults. Why do we have this discrepancy? Well, you have to understand that food security is only one of the determinants of nutritional outcomes for children. Key determinants of standing is the ill health of pregnant mothers, the health and nutrition of the mothers before and during pregnancy and lactation, inadequate breastfeeding, poor feeding practices for infants and young children, and unhealthy environments for children. So this complexity of factors makes so that the trends, which are welcome because they're going down in stunting, do not follow those on food security. So we have seen then the rate of stunting decline from 29% to 22%, which is a welcome trend. However, today there are 150 million children, smaller than the age of five, that suffer from stunting. In some regions, stunting affects one-third of children younger than 5 years of age. Now, another problem is that multiple forms of malnutrition exist, with countries experiencing simultaneously high rates of child undernutrition, anemia among women, and adult obesity. Rising number of childhood overweight and adult obesity are worrisome. And here is my next slide that summarizes also certain things that have been said before in here. Those are the rates of adult obesity in different parts of the world. As the Director General mentioned, the global prevalence of obesity more than doubled between 1980 and 2014, which we have the last data. In 2014, more than 600 million adults were obese, equal to about 13% of the world's adult population. Now, I don't need to remind you what are the health consequences of obesity: high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, forms of diabetes, etc. Now, surprisingly, the prevalence is higher of obesity among women than among men. And while it varies widely across regions, as you can see, the highest rate are observed in Northern America, Europe, and Oceania, which they seem at the last year to coincide to about 28%. The rates are also high in Latin America and the Caribbean, roughly one quarter of the adult population. Now, so we have seen that progress has slowed when it comes to undernutrition of children, or reversed when we have the undernourishment, the prevalence of undernourishment. Now, what is the reasons behind this? They have been outlined here, and I will be a little bit more detail on those. Conflict, we'll talk a little bit in more detail in a minute. Climate change and weather-related events have affected the food availability in many countries and contributed to rising food insecurity. This is what some of the food balance sheets we have show. New information from, as I said, food commodity balances for many countries point to recent reduction in food availability and increases in prices in local markets in regions affected by El Niño, El La Niña, and related phenomena, most notably in Eastern and Southern Africa and Southeastern Asia. Economic slowdowns, as the Director General said, are coming in countries, especially those that are highly dependent on agricultural or non-agricultural commodities, which prices have declined. A decline in prices reduces export earnings, it reduces the ability of countries to import, and so it reduces food availability. It may increase prices, which compromises the ability of people to buy food. It increases household incomes, it decreases household incomes, also affecting access, but fundamentally it increases fiscal revenues, which governments may use to have the network of social protection that would prevent people from falling into hunger and malnutrition. I think the Director General mentioned the example of several countries in South America that they are very well known for the source of protection networks. Now, let's go into the conflict situation, because this is also the special theme of SOFI this year. Conflicts have risen dramatically in number and have become more complex and intractable in nature. Whether the wars, direct wars between nations, may have declined, conflicts within nations have increased in violence and extent. And a lot of them, as you will see in a map that we have in SOFI, they're actually regionalized, with a lot of regional forces joining in these types of conflicts, or internationalized, where the international community sends peacekeeping forces and other means in the conflict. Now, the most significant number that outlines the relationship between conflict and undernourishment and hunger is the fact that 489 million people that are chronically undernourished live in countries which are affected by conflict, and 122 million children, which are stunted out of 155, also live in countries, 75% are characterized by conflict. Another important issue here is that while most other countries have marked significant 25-year declines in the prevalence of hunger and undernutrition, progress in the majority of countries affected by conflict has stagnated or deteriorated. For those countries that suffer from a protracted crisis, the rate of undernutrition can be as much as 2.5 times of countries that do not suffer conflicts. It's pretty obvious how conflict would affect the livelihoods of people. It takes away lives, it destroys infrastructure, it creates economic hardship. As a lot of conflicts take place in rural areas, it destroys agricultural infrastructure and the ability of people to produce and earn income. Not only those that directly earn income from agriculture, but also the rural communities which they have their livelihood supported by agricultural activities upstream or downstream. Now, and as a result then, all the food, the four dimensions of food security, availability, access, stability, utilization are all affected negatively, which explains the catastrophic effects of conflicts on food security. Now, in a lot of cases, we have all three of these reasons or these root causes I had described, and we focus on this report: economic slowdown, conflict, and weather-related events come together. Here, we talk about conflict with climate-related shocks, which is a leading cause of severe food insecurity and food crisis. Famine broke out in parts of South Sudan in early 2017. High risk of famine in other conflict-wracked places, namely northeast Nigeria, Somalia, and Yemen. And today, we know that there are 53 million people with a suffered emergency levels of hunger in 2016 in countries that are afflicted both by conflict and by drought. So you can see the magnitude of the interaction between those factors. As I said, in the past decade, conflicts have increased in both extent and complexity, and it will be a major factor that will hamper our progress towards 2030. Now, so how do we address food insecurity and malnutrition in conflict-affected situations? First of all, we shouldn't wait until peace comes about in order to make interventions. This is well understood, and this is a common practice. But there is a lot to do in countries under conflict at the same time that we try to do peace-building efforts, and some of those things that we do, they would actually contribute to sustainable peace. One is support the livelihoods of people that in a way that address the root causes of conflicts, but also promotes re-engagement in productive economic activities, including cash transfers and various social protection programs in conflict situations. Community-based approaches are very important, as we describe in the report, as are interventions that contribute to building the capacity of institutions and local actors to support communities and individuals. For instance, increasing priority of and support for agricultural development contributes to recovery, building resilience in livelihoods of people, and improve food security and nutrition as a cornerstone of peaceful and inclusive society. Don't forget that many times local conflicts are due to conflicts over natural resources of which quality and quantity may be compromised by extreme weather events. And so these kinds of situations need to be faced. So here is my last slide. There is this, I think this report should be used as a clear warning. We are optimistic that the 2030 agenda on food security and all forms of malnutrition can be achieved. And so we can achieve a world without hunger in 2030, but it's not going to be automatic. We have to address the root causes. Some of them we described in this report. Some others in different contexts may be different of hunger and undernutrition. So we will achieve it, but we should not consider it as an automatic result. Thank you very much for your attention.
I can see already Efe raising the hand. Belén, you have the floor.
I would like to confirm the last year when hunger was increased before. Apart from the last increase, obviously.
Okay, let me get some other questions, and then we'll reply a few of them. Any other questions here in Rome? The Spanish corner is very. El País.
Para el País de España es para el director general, que ha dicho que espera que el año que viene se puedan presentar datos más positivos sobre el hambre. Me gustaría saber si encuentra en estos momentos razones de peso para creer que los datos del año que viene puedan ser más positivos y, en su caso, de qué razones se trata.
Thank you. I can see somebody else there. We'll get these three questions and then we'll go into the replies. The gentleman there at the back. Thank you.
Associated Press, for AP. The Director General. I wanted to know how the Rohingya emergency will affect the next report and which are the operations carried now to cope the Rohingya emergency? Thank you very much.
Okay, let me get first to the replies. Costas, the first question, and the others we address to the director and I think to the president of IFAD.
Yeah, thank you very much. According to the data that we present here, the last time that we had an increase, it was in the middle period between 2000 and 2005, that we had an increase in the number of undernourished, then it flattened out, and then it started being reduced. In terms of the prevalence of undernourished, the last time of the increase was about, if I can see here in the graph, about 2001 or 2002, and then it started going down. Slowly. So these are the last, based on the data that we have this year, right? Which, as was said by the Director General, every year in SOFI, we revise the whole series. We don't just revise the last numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Costas. So the second question was addressed to the Director General from El País. Director General?
Well, if I understood correctly, why we are optimists. As we just shared a number that is going the, let's say, wrong direction, as Gilbert said. I think that if you look for the main causes of the number to rise this year, there are basically three, as I said, conflicts, the climate change impact is particularly draw in Africa, and the third one, the slowdown growth. Conflicts, we need to be always optimists that this will come down. And in fact, there are good progress. In South Sudan, for example, there are a break. Even in Syria, we are seeing good progress in the talks and so on. So we believe that the huge impact of conflicts will be over next year. So it already happened, let's say, that, and will not increase more. Also, there are good news about El Nino. We have the forecast at the beginning of the year that El Nino would repeat again this year. And fortunately, it didn't happen. So now we need to wait for La Niña, comes a bit late as a woman, to see if it will affect. But the what we have nowadays, the information, is we don't expect these to repeat again for the first time. And finally, the good news really are the recovery of the crisis. In all parts of the world, now including Europe, we can see signs of recovery. So growth is again the rule for all the countries. This is particularly important, economic growth, because as Gilbert rightly pointed out, it's not all growth. But what we saw, particularly, let's say, in Latin American countries, the countries were using the economic growth to provide better conditions to the poor and setting social nets to protect them. And with the crisis, they started to pull this down. They were supposed to pull it up. There are more people needing the support. But they're allocated not economic conditions to do it. So growth is fundamental in any case, particularly in societies that has a lot of youth coming in to the labor market. This is particularly important in Africa and Latin America, also in Asia. So this is the main reason, particularly the recover that we see in the horizon.
We had the question from AP, Associated Press, maybe the president of IFAD, if you want to address it. Do you remember the question? Can you repeat the question, please? Hold on a second. And it goes without saying that any of the people in the podium or Mr. Branca, if you want to intervene, please feel free. In the meantime, we have also the representative from WFP, the deputy director, Amir Abdullah. Welcome. Please, if you can repeat the question.
Yeah. How the Rohingya emergency will affect the next report, and which are the operations carried now to cope this emergency, the Rohingya emergency?
I'll give the floor then to WFP. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, thank you. Unfortunately, it is passed to WFP because it's a new emergency. It's a new emergency on top of an ongoing emergency. Well, let's say it's an increased conflict and will need to be dealt with on an emergency basis, but the sooner we can get to a longer-term solution, which at the end of the day is always going to be about resolving conflict and having enough peace and stability for people to settle properly. In terms of what we're doing immediately, let me address that. The World Food Programme, along with many partners, is increasing the reach. The crisis there didn't begin yesterday. There are already over 300,000 registered displaced and refugees caused by previous incidences that had caused them to cross into the areas around Cox's Bazar and other parts of Bangladesh. And they were being dealt with. What has happened over the last few days or weeks, the last couple of weeks in particular, is that over 400,000 new arrivals have arrived. They are not yet settled properly. That the work to do that is being undertaken by UNHCR, IOM, along with very much along with the government of Bangladesh. From its part, WFP and other partners, already of the 400,000 across, we've reached nearly 100,000 in the last day or two, and we will put in place scale-up measures to reach the others over as the shortest time possible. People are being reached, as I said, they're not yet settled properly. As such, they're being reached with high energy biscuits. Where possible, they're being reached with hot meals that are being prepared. All of that has to be done on an immediate basis. But you have midterm solutions which are finding them proper shelter and basic living conditions so that they can at least settle temporarily. And then one would hope that conditions would arise quickly, that they could return. How it will impact a report of the future? Well, you've seen the numbers: 400,000 new people who will be food insecure if they don't have a settlement. Unfortunately, given what we are seeing as the current occurrences on the Myanmar side of the border, we have every reason, and the World Food Programme is putting in place contingency measures for that, is that 400 could easily go up to 600 and more. And so those are the sort of numbers of people who will be added to the list. But I think, it's not just what happens to the numbers and statistics in this report that I think we have to keep in mind. You've heard from all the distinguished colleagues before about the number of children in this who are suffering malnutrition, and they're suffering long-term impact. And those impacts, we often look at the state of food security and nutrition, and you think automatically SDG 2, achieving SDG 2. But those children will now be challenged in areas of health, so, SDG 3, education, SDG 4, economic empowerment, and it's, so SDG 1 on poverty, and it will lead to inequalities, SDG 10. So there's just a few of the SDGs that are all going to be impacted. It's not just two, all because we're not able to reach SDG 16. And deal with the conflict. And I think that is one of the messages that really comes out of the drive-in cases. But so I think it's not just what happens in the report, it's what happens to the future of the people who are being challenged unfairly. Thank you.
Thank you. I can see Francesco Franca, WHO wants to also. Please, Francesco, go ahead. Make some remarks.
Yeah, thank you very much, Enrique, and good morning. I'd really like to speak to the question on what are the reasons for hope. And I think we need to acknowledge that there is an increased political commitment to improve nutrition. The declaration of 2016 to 2025 of the decade of actual nutrition by the General Assembly is a sign that we're really understanding the important value of nutrition for the Sustainable Development Goals. And there's more and more countries who are making policy and financial commitments to improve nutrition. The stakeholders are working together with a good unified policy framework. Clearly, hope is something that we need to foster with our energy, with our investments, and so we need to substantiate this promise with the fulfillment of those commitments. But I think that could be a good sign for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Francesco. Let me open a round of more questions here for the media. I can see IPS and Notimex and a gentleman here. So we'll have the three in that order. IPS, down there.
Our question is addressed to the three Rome-based agencies. Given the adverse trend, how and what are you planning to do to change this trend?
Thank you. Let me get to Notimex.
El Sol del México. Mico, te corrijo, perdón. En mi pregunta, si es posible hacerla en español al director Graciano da Silva y a Víctor Aguayo. Usted mencionaron que la situación en Sudamérica en particular está registrando datos negativos respecto a la presidencia, que parecía que estaban erradicando el hambre. Quisiera saber si estos problemas son debidos única y exclusivamente a situaciones externas o si hay algún tipo de problemática interna que está provocando este problema. Y también saber cuál es la condición de los niños desde el punto de vista de la malnutrición y la obesidad en América Latina. Gracias.
Gracias al Sol de México. The last question here. The gentleman, if you can identify.
Good afternoon. I'm from Russian news agency RIA Novosti. And my question goes to WFP Deputy Director. And probably his colleagues. Given the recent developments on ground in Syria, what do the UN agency plan to do concerning helping people in these conflict-torn zones? Thank you.
Thank you. With this, we will be closing the morning session. We had some journalists in Africa, but I'm afraid we don't have time to go into that. So we have three questions. The first question from IPS, what can we do to change the trend? Anybody from the podium? The president of IFAD?
Yeah, let me, maybe the question from IPS, as I was saying a bit in my introductory remark, it's very clear that there are two things. And I believe my colleague from WFP just said it, we shouldn't wait for the humanitarian crisis to be over before we start the developments at the investment side. So we really have to be almost at the same time or as soon as the crisis situation and security situation allow to start the long term, we need to do that. Secondly, the long term investment at the end is part of the solution, is the core of the solution. And that should not be seen only from agriculture perspective. Of course, the Rome-based agency, from the agriculture perspective, is the starting point. But since we talk about crisis countries and so forth, which means that there's also issue of governance, whether is the issue can be from internal or external sources. The governance dimension, the political or democratic governance, is also where we also need to work on. And in IFAD, for example, we're trying to combine both the agriculture side by most of our loan, targeting also the poorest and the remotest area. So talking about the SDG 10, the fight against the inequality also had to come from. But I fundamentally believe that investment in technology, productivity, and also fighting against the 40% food loss that we are very much aware of, and ultimately also providing the access to market to the smallholders, particularly the smallholder, I believe that is part of the solution.
Thank you. Anybody else wants to add anything on this, Director General of FAO?
Just to compliment, in fact, the investments are the most important, but let me add concretely, we agreed, the three Rome bases, to work more together in the field, especially in those countries that we are seeing this huge impact of conflict and the climate change. So I think this brings more complementarity in the work we do. So it's not only food assistance and then FAO comes in. No, we are doing a continuing work, let's say, from the emergency to the humanitarian and development. This is very important. Also, let me add to that, that more and more we see that there are new tools available for us that makes more efficient our work. Give it an example. We started with cash vouchers, food for work in Somalia when the famine had already killed 250,000 people. So we took a long time to implement it. Now in South Sudan, we intervene immediately in a complementary base, I won't say that we don't lost any life, but we lost incomparable less. We pulled South Sudan out of famine in 3 months. And in Somalia, we took 6 months. So we are becoming, let's say, more effective in addressing those crises because they are repeating more and more, and they came to stay. We are not, there is no illusion that those protected crises will be solved immediately with one only intervention. So we are more prepared ourselves, our team, to work for more long time in the countries.
Thank you, Mr. Aguayo from UNICEF.
Yes, thank you so much. I think I will take the opportunity of the question raised by our colleague from Mexico to just say a couple of things. First, how extremely pleased we are at UNICEF, Director General Da Silva, to see that what used to be the state of food insecurity in the world now has become the state of food security and nutrition in the world. So we are extremely pleased to see this attention to nutrition and this attention to children. And these two things are extremely important because perhaps the food security that we have not talked enough about in the past is the food security of children in the first years of life. The data that we have in the UN, the UN agencies, makes it very visible that the diets of children, by and large, in low and middle-income countries are extremely poor. That is, here we are talking about 155 million children who are stunted. Those are the children that we can measure, that they have anthropometry signs, clinical signs of malnutrition. But then there are all those cases of malnutrition that are hidden, children who are anemic, children who are deficient in essential nutrients. Our data indicates that only one child in six in low and middle income countries is getting day in, day out, a diet that ensures appropriate and healthy growth and development. So that food insecurity in the first years of life is a key dimension of food security. Hence, our happiness to see food security, children, and nutrition be brought together by the five agencies on this report. On the issue of Latin America, I think Latin America is a case in point of what is happening in a continent and could happen in the world or is already happening in the world. That is, here we have a continent where economic growth has been quite significant over the last decades, a continent where we also have seen forms of severe malnutrition almost disappear. We still have a very significant proportion of children who are growing not well, who are stunted, and with that, we see an increasing number of children who are overweight and obese. That is of concern because while in the past we tend to believe that stunting was the malnutrition of the poor and overweight and obesity was the malnutrition of the rich, that is less and less true. Overweight and obesity is increasingly as well the malnutrition of the poor, the poorer children and the poorer families, because healthy diets for many families are becoming more and more expensive and therefore out of reach. So I think in the case of Latin America, we cannot lose sight that the agenda of stunting and wasting is an unfinished agenda. We still have more undernourished children in Latin America than we have overweight and obese children. However, the number of overweight and obese children continues to increase and is increasing particularly among the rural poor and also among children living in peri-urban areas. So that is overweight and obesity increasingly a malnutrition of the poor and not the malnutrition of the rich because of low access to healthy diets.
Mr. Aguayo, let me take the opportunity of the question from El Sol to give that was addressed to the Director General, if the Director General on the situation in South America specifically, if you could address the question in Spanish. There are some colleagues from radio and television that would like to have your quote in Spanish, if possible.
Gracias, Enrique. Lo que puedo decir es muy difícil separar lo que es interno, lo que es externo. Y una región que tiene el sector exportador tiene un peso tan relevante. Entonces, en general, América Latina ha sido afectada por la caída de los precios de las commodities y eso afectó la capacidad de recaudación de los gobiernos y afectó el crecimiento económico de toda la región. Pero es sintomático, por ejemplo, que el panorama que muestra el SOFI es un aumento del hambre en América del Sur, que era la región que iba adelante en la erradicación del hambre, y una mejoría en Centroamérica y en el Caribe, que eran las dos zonas que iban por rezagadas. ¿No? ¿Por qué? Porque Sudamérica es exportadora de materias primas. Entonces, con la caída de los precios, pierde. Y las regiones Centroamérica y Caribe, que son importadoras netas de alimentos, ganan porque los precios bajan. Entonces, no hay como hacer esa rígida separación de causas internas e internas. Lo que es importante decir es que En América Latina, la preocupación mayor sigue siendo Haití. Haití es realmente el problema del hambre en la región, el continente americano. Los otros países tienen fluctuaciones. Son algunos más importantes que otros, pero fluctuaciones conjunturales, diría yo. Hay un problema de fondo en Haití, mitad de la población sufre privación de alimentos, está mal alimentada. Los niños, la malnutrición ha crecido, ha reducido, por increíble que parezca, entre los niños, pero ha aumentado la obesidad. Y la combinación de las dos es que los niños no van bien, en el sentido que es una combinación de un efecto de poco alimento con alimentos de baja calidad. Mucho azúcar, muchos cereales, reemplazando antes lo que eran frutas, verduras, legumbres y carnes. Usted sabe que la región come mucha carne, sobre todo pollo, pero también carne vacuna en el sur. Y eso se ha reducido significativamente. Mismo países de consumo tradicional de carnes, como la Cono Sur, han reducido su consumo.
Muchas gracias, Director General. And the last question from Russian News Agency was addressed specifically to WFP.
Thank you. I think, first of all, once we get some positive developments, we get increased access, and we get increased access at much cheaper methods. For quite some time now, we've been carrying out some people in certain parts of Syria, Deir ez-Zor, we've only been able to reach with very expensive parachute drop. If conditions, as we hope, will allow us to soon reach them by land, that will reduce costs of delivery, and which means we can reach more people or the same people for a much longer period in time. But that's just, in a sense, the first dividend or one of them. The real solution is in what the Director General had mentioned earlier, which is once we, you know, if we get good signs and we actually get movements towards peace and talks lead to actual situation on the ground where people can start to return to their homes, then it really needs to switch to what also the president of IFAD had just pointed out. Humanitarian needs will continue to be needed for a while, but they need to immediately and as soon as possible switch to conditions that allow people to start resettling, allow them to start their own either agricultural production or other economic activities. And once we get to that, whilst the question is addressed to WFP, the role of FAO, IFAD, and other partners in those conditions will become as critical, if not more critical, for longer-term solutions. So I think, you know, but what really needs to happen is, yes, there are early signs, and we hope that that will continue, but it needs to move from talks to situation on the ground that people feel comfortable enough to return. Today, you've got 9 people inside Syria who need assistance because they can't be where they need to be. You've got over 5 million in refugee situations just in the neighboring countries in the region. So imagine if we could, you know, at one sweep, get 14 million people off the numbers we've just been talking about. That's the sort of things that have to happen. But it, you know, it will. We're not there yet. I think there's cause for optimism, but we need to ensure that the peace dividend is actually delivered because peace is sustained.
Mr. Abdullah, we are going to close here. We have been 20 minutes over the 1 hour that we are scheduled. I know that some journalists, Republica and others, wanted to intervene. Let me only tell you 2 things. Well, we have a lot of experts available, and all the information is on internet, but all the experts available in all the different languages that you can think of, ready for you to answer the question. And the second is just to mention that this is the global launch, and we have been looking at the global figures and the global trends, and in the coming weeks we are going to have the regional panoramas looking more in details at the regional trends and the countries in detail. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming.